And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wieldin. How's it going, Johannes?
Yeah. I don't know. There are so many things to say this morning, from Matthew Ross's denigration of the all-powerful tragically hip to the decisions on challenging the goal last night, to the non-calls we saw in Toronto, to the utter collapse of the Montreal Canadiens in Game 2. I don't know where to go. I am okay. I could use another cup of coffee and a lot of hope, Connor. Can you give me either one of those things?
I can try, although I'm usually the pessimist of the two of us, but I'll do my best. I mean, the big positive is they split the first two games with Toronto, which is a big thing. I mean, obviously, recency bias affects how everyone feels about it, but, you know, going in, if you said the Canadiens were to split with the Leafs, considering, you know, no one gave this team a chance, a lot of people said Leafs in five and Leafs sweeping, you know, so, you know, it looks like it's going pretty, you know, it's going better than people expected, at least the analysts. So there's nothing to be optimistic about there. I mean, clearly after last night, there's going to be some more lineup changes. God, I hope there will be. But I mean, you know, let's start positively. Let's go back to game one. Montreal Canadiens won the game 2-1. It was a great effort. Overall, obviously the game was overshadowed by the really unfortunate kind of fluky incident where John Tavares caught a knee to the head and, you know, it looked real bad there for a while, you know, when he tried to get up and kind of keeled over backwards again. And, like, you know, it looked bad. Thankfully, he's all right. I mean, not that the concussions are great, but, you know, it looked like it could have been way worse. So, thankfully, you know, he's out of the hospital. He's home. He's recovering. You know, it's all good news. But, you know, the incident on the ice definitely kind of overshadowed the game a bit. And it was there were a lot of talking points about it during and after and in the days off, which kind of, and we can get to after, which kind of bothered me a bit. But, you know, the game overall was good. The Canadiens, I thought, played really well. They were able to kind of keep the Leafs in check, which was nice. But, you know, you could also argue that, you know, seeing Tavares sort of laid out on the ice like that kind of affected them as well emotionally. But I'm curious of your thoughts on the game.
Well, look, I mean, they played as well as they could using that sort of contain counterpunch style. Way more deliberate and careful, I thought, than last night. And for an instant, it seemed as though the roster decisions and the game plan looked like it was smart. I think the injury to Tavares and the whole maelstrom around that was not a good look. You know, I love the sport of hockey. I love the game of hockey. I don't love the culture of hockey. The idea that someone should have to fight for an accident seems so stupid to me. And the fact that you had Montreal Canadiens lining up to say, yeah, that's the way it should be. Just as a fan, it just really divorces me from the culture of hockey in a way that I don't like. I'm really glad Tavares is okay. I thought that his medical care in the immediate aftermath was borderline malpractice. I could not believe when they picked him up and then allowed him to slump back over on his spine. I will tell you, my wife, as listeners of the pod know, is a physician, was screaming at the television in anger, and I saw some people on Twitter recognize that. I thought it was a classy move when the Canadiens doctor came out to sort of advise and Perry sort of helped skate him over. Look, it just became a weird game after that. It's really hard to figure anything out about the series based on that game. The Byron goal was incredible. Yes. But I think when we think back on game one, it will really be about the Tavares injury and not much else. it's hard to sort of take anything about the series, as I said, from that game one. And so you immediately want to move on to the game two stuff. But I guess just to go back, I was somewhat relieved that the veterans were able to play as well as they were able to play. And Connor, tell me if you agree with this. I thought it was the most defensively responsible and coherent sort of game plan that maybe we've seen from the Canadians all season. I'd be interested in your take on that.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, they held the Leafs to one goal. And not many chances. I mean, obviously the one that sticks out is that Price made that huge save on the Mitch Marner in the third period on a 2-on-1. I mean, that was pretty incredible. You know, obviously, like in any game, there's going to be a few lapses, but they were able to cover them very well. You know, the one Toronto goal was kind of a bit of a, not a fluke, but, you know, it was a save or a puck that kind of rebounded and landed to someone to William Nylander, who was able to just, you know, had an open net to just sort of push the puck into. So, I mean, nothing you could really do about it. It's just one of those sort of things that can happen. But yeah, I agree. It was really good, solid defensive effort to sort of keep the Leafs in check and sort of doing what I think they want to do, and kind of something they got away from a little bit in game two, I think. I mean, game two, there's also a lot to break down in terms of, you know, you mentioned it, like missed calls and things like that. But no, I mean, you're right. It's hard to take a lot away from a game where something as significant as the injury to John Tavares happened. It kind of casts a shadow, and then you have to deal with all the... I mean, most people agree it was a complete fluke, but I was kind of pissed off watching Sportsnet where they're trying to throw out the idea that it was on purpose, or, you know, could it have been on purpose? And, like, I just find that irresponsible. And then there's all the stupid hot takes from media afterwards, and, like, you know, some Sportsnet radio digging up Christopher Stieg, who said, oh, no, it's Ben Sherratt's fault because da-da-da. And then they said, oh, it was a knee on knee. It's just like people finding ways to try and make it more, try and find a way to say that it was deliberate when, I mean, anyone who's played hockey or played a sport for that matter, you know, you'll see an incident like that where something's just, it's just a fluke, unavoidable. Like, I don't know. It just kind of bothered me that everyone was searching to make this a bit more than it was. Like, I understand you're upset that you're a fan of the team or whatever, and then one of your better players is out injured, and it was, like I said, looked pretty bad. But, you know, I just got a little annoyed that people were trying to make this a bigger story instead of saying, you know, it was a fluke. I mean, most people were saying it, but you find people that are trying to find more than what is actually there, and it really kind of, I don't know, it just kind of bothered me. It was just like, are we really that desperate for storylines that we're trying to find, we're trying to make a villain out of, no, first it was they're trying to make a villain out of Perry, and everyone's like, you know, they slow it down. It looks so bad in any sport. You slow something down, it looks way more egregious because you're like, look at all the time he had. And you're like, well, it's going in slow motion. You put it at real speed, you're like, how the heck is he supposed to avoid him? He pretty much fell right into his knee, you know.
People from Toronto do not understand why the rest of Canada doesn't like them, and this is why. And let me just break it down for you. Number one, Sportsnet is trash, and the sooner that we can get rid of Sportsnet as the national broadcaster, the better. Because the showing that on a loop in slow-mo and feeding outrage culture in Leaf Nation is garbage. It's bottom of the barrel garbage. And it's shameful, and I mean, if they had any integrity at all, there would be some sort of investigation in terms of, you know, the airways are public, right? Like, these private corporations rent them, or lease them, I guess more properly, from all of us who are able to regulate them, and I mean, it's bad enough that they're all homers for Toronto, but the way that they handled that, I don't know anybody serious who says it wasn't an accident. It's atrocious that they would feed the worst elements of Leaf Nation by playing into that. But the other thing that happened was the cover of the Toronto Sun. And obviously the Sun newspapers
and the Journal de Montréal
are not where you go. Sorry, say that again.
And the Journal de Montréal.
Yeah. I mean, neither of those papers have necessarily a great reputation in terms of, if that's where you're going for your news, we need to have a conversation.
They're glorified tabloids.
And to use that injury splayed on your front page to try and revive your dying industry is just incredibly disappointing on multiple levels.
I was going to say, I don't know if you remember in 2012 when Montreal was playing Ottawa and Eller got hurt in the first game. Was, you know, he was out for the series and he had like a bloody face hit from Eric Greiba, and then, you know, Ottawa won the game and it was first blood to Ottawa and a picture of Eller bleeding after being like, you know, having his head taken off. So, I mean, the Sun is the Sun. I agree. It was pretty brutal. And I don't think there was anyone on either side that really appreciated either of those covers, the Journal de Montréal too. I mean, not necessarily as... I mean, they showed a picture of Perry's knee hitting Tavares's face. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't any better. I mean, it wasn't necessarily Tavares, like, bloody and passing out on the ice like the Sun, but it was bad. And again, I don't know anyone, Canadiens fan, Leafs fan, that was, you know, all happy with any of that. Everyone sort of called BS on it, and rightfully so, I think. And to your point, I mean, these dying, trashy newspapers trying to drum up any kind of interest. I mean, they got, I guess, the attention they wanted because everyone was kind of crapping on them. But yeah, it's just not, it just wasn't a good look. And, you know, someone I saw on Twitter was just like, you know, I guess that's the problem with having a day off between games is when something like that happens, people are searching for something to talk about more or other than what maybe everyone sort of saw outside of the injury on the ice. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't think going into game two, anyone thought the Leafs were going to be as necessarily, I wouldn't say they were flat, but you know, they'd probably be a little bit more motivated because, you know, losing the first game in the playoffs to get the Canadiens, a team that, you know, everyone sort of picked them to sort of roll over and kind of was kind of, people were calling it a bye. So to lose the first game was a little bit shocking. Although I did find a little bit of Habs Nation kind of over-celebrating. Like, I know the Paul Byron goal was really amazing. It was a great effort, great goal. But people were treating it like it was a Game 7 winner instead of a Game 1 winner. And everyone's like, framing this picture. And like, yeah, it's great. He won the game. It was great. But, you know, there's still a series to play. You know, this wasn't Game 7 or this wasn't an elimination game. It was the first game. But, you know, the Leafs are going to come out hard and more motivated, obviously, to tie up the series. And I thought in the first period, the game was pretty even. I mean,
yeah,
obviously the score indicated that, but I thought the Leafs got really lucky with their goal when Artturi Lehkonen was trying to, you know, clear the puck around the boards and it hit the ref and popped right out to a Leaf, and then Jason Spezza scored. It was kind of, you know, I mean, we could talk about the refs, and it seems like they were, I found them in the way a little bit more than they usually are, which was kind of bothering me on top of other shenanigans that I'm sure we're going to get into. But, you know, it was kind of a fluky play that led to the Leafs tying goal. And then, you know, after that, they kind of never looked back, I guess. I mean, the Habs did themselves no favors, but anyway, I don't know. We can talk about all the other shenanigans, but yeah, Leafs ended up winning 5-1. And yeah, the series is tied. I mean, look, it's a tied series and no one thought it was going to be that way. So that's the, and that Canadiens have moves to make, hopefully, God willing. But what were your thoughts on, I mean, outside of, I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure we're going to talk about all the other shenanigans, but
we can get into that. The game itself. Yeah, I mean, the Habs came out, I thought, fairly strong and had that effective forecheck that led to the Kokiniemi goal. But then in the second period, I just thought they all ran out of gas, and it looked like the veterans were tired already, and it looked like they had no legs. And Toronto did this thing, which is pretty bad news if you're a Habs fan, where they were pretty effective at shutting down the neutral zone. And that's what we saw Ottawa and Calgary do to great effect during the regular season. It's not something we've seen much out of Toronto. And if Toronto has figured that out, and we don't have a way to break it back open, I think we're in a little bit of trouble. My concern about the rest of the game, I mean, look, any time you're playing shorthanded for 8 minutes, it's a miracle more goals weren't called. And we can get into what I would call the TSN turning point of that disastrous decision to challenge the goal. I realize the Leafs didn't score on the ensuing penalty when the goal was ruled legit. But the problem was that you already had your gassed
penalty kill
unit, and then they're even more exhausted. And I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I you know, I have lots to say about that call. But I think the challenge for me is that it looked like the team just sort of got tired. and there wasn't much left. And it occurs to me that players like Tatar don't really have it in the playoffs. We haven't seen it from him in the postseason. I also thought that Toffoli looked kind of out of it a little bit, as if the intensity of the game just didn't seem to suit him, his game. I think Gallagher's playing injured. I think Weber is not really, if it was any other time, he wouldn't be back in the lineup. I think that the idea that we were going to be able to get more from certain people in our lineup, I'm worried that theory may not be accurate, because we certainly didn't see it last night. But that 5-1 score, I think, is somewhat misleading. I really think it was sort of a 3-1 game with an empty netter kind of thing. The last 5 minutes of the game was essentially as long as the preceding 15 minutes of the third period, because there were so many penalties and nonsense. The Canadians did that thing where they pulled the goalie for the last 6 minutes or something. I wondered if it was just like a possession drill. Like, how many passes can we make it before we turn over? And like, because possession had been so brutal, there were so many giveaways. I don't know. So I don't think that the score was as ugly as it seems, but I do think that the Canadians were comprehensively defeated. And I think the challenge that we have now is not only roster decisions looking to game three, but what is the strategy to break through the middle? Can we get back to that game one sort of contained counterpunch style? Or are we going to try and bring in more youth and speed? Hopefully Evans is ready to go. Maybe Caulfield can come in and challenge the Leafs at their own game. So in terms of the actual game, the shenanigans notwithstanding, that's what I saw.
Yeah, I agree. I think the 5-1 is a little bit, doesn't really reflect the totality of what the game was. But, you know, the Canadians did not deserve to win that game. I mean, they played really good in the first, I thought, and then for parts of the third, obviously, like you said, the second. Even on top of the tired penalty killers, you're skilled guys, like I think they said Josh Anderson hadn't been on the ice in however long, right? So, you know, yeah, you take four penalties back to back to back like that, you know, you're isolating a lot of your players too who don't get on the ice, and that kind of takes them out of the game. It got pretty ugly. There was a lot of the thing that was a little bit really concerning was a lot of the issues they had in the regular season reared up in this game, you know, not disciplined. Can't score, defensive lapses, poor judgment, things like that. It was just kind of frustrating that way. Whereas if they play like that against the Leafs again, maybe the Leafs will win 4 in a row if this is what we're going to see from the Canadians the rest of the way. So they can't get too outside of what they did in game one. And my concern is they can't score, right? I mean, I think they haven't scored over 3 goals a game in the playoffs since game 4 or 5 against the Rangers in 2017, but like, that's not true. But they don't score a lot of goals. That's kind of what I'm getting at, right? It's going to be tough to beat the Leafs 2-1 every game. It's not realistic considering how potent they are on offense. So what do you got to do? You know, I mean, I think that was the reason why everyone was kind of upset that like Cole Caulfield wasn't in the lineup, because he's a guy who can score. And a team that struggles for goals, why are you going to take out a guy who's showing he can score goals? To your point about the veterans, yeah, for everything that went right in game one for them, the veterans, young guys like Eric Staal, Shea Weber, guys who were kind of John Merrill, people were kind of wondering why they were in the lineup. It kind of went all pretty wrong in game two. Merrill was a disaster. I don't know. Every time he was on the ice, something bad was happening. He was making bad decisions all the time, everywhere. Eric Staal had a pretty... Eric Staal impacted the game zilch yesterday. I think he had one hit. No shots, no blocks, no... You know what I mean? Like, he didn't do anything. And Shea Weber, like you said, you know, he kind of came down to earth. And I kind of get annoyed now when everyone talks like he... You know, I think there's a point where he had a sheet, you know, let go one of his slap shots from the point, and they're all talking about him loading up. And, obviously they don't watch every Canadiens game, but I feel like Shea Weber's shot is not... And you can say maybe it's partly because of his hand, but his shot's been a bit of a meh for a little while now. And no one wants to really... People talk about it, but not as much. And he's not... Like, I don't know. I just... I kind of got really upset in the third period when he took that stupid penalty against was it Pierre Engvall, where Engvall hit him and then he got up and decided just for no reason to cross check him and go back to the penalty kill, which essentially ended the game, which, you know, I think was the William Nylander scored on that off the post rebound to make it 4-1 and really ended the game. It was something you don't really want to see from your captain, kind of losing his cool in a game that was technically still sort of, they could have come back in and sort of taking the key penalty to sort of put the game away. But yeah, if they don't insert, if I don't see Romanov and Caulfield back in, I mean, we saw, you mentioned it, Kotkaniemi drew into game two because of Evans' injury, but I hope Evans coming back doesn't mean Kotkaniemi comes out. It means Staal comes out because, we got to stop treating these deadline depth moves, I'm talking about the Canadians, as important roster moves. These are guys you're getting for spare, like you're getting for cheap, right? You're giving up next to nothing to get these guys. Doesn't mean, you know, they're not guys that should be automatic insert into the lineup players who should be playing over your other guys. That's not why, I mean, you got them for depth, and I know Staal's a name, but we've seen enough, I think everyone's seen enough of him to know that he doesn't have much left in the tank. So I just kind of get annoyed. It seems like I said, they're losing the plot a bit on what they should be focusing on. And hopefully they make changes next game. And if they don't, then I don't know. I mean, because it's a back-to-back too, right? They're playing Monday and Tuesday. So,
all right. Just before we get to the shenanigans of the game, sure. Connor, I just want to ask you one thing. I was thinking about this last night. I wish they had done their veteran shutdown game in game one. Then they had opened it up in game two. Then in game three, they had come back to shutdown. And then game four, they had opened it up again. And they had rested their veteran players and given them very specific roles that would allow them to succeed in what they're good at. Because I'm not saying Staal should never get in again, but you have to use him at the right time for the right purpose and the right role. And I just, the idea that they were going to hit everything that moved and try to wear them down. That's what they tried, three, 4 years ago against the Rangers, where Pacioretty got injured in the first game. Like, there's nothing wrong with bringing the physical game. But I found last night they were going out of their way to throw body checks, which actually ended up putting them out of position. And it seemed to be tiring them more than it was beating up on the Leafs. And so I just wish, I think the game plan itself is somewhat flawed. There is a role for those veterans. I think game one proved it. But I don't, the idea that you can rely upon them this much, I think is a mistake. And I think it would make sense to force the Leafs to adapt to you by having everybody come into game two thinking that they're going to be sort of contained and shut down again, and then giving them a different look, bringing in a Caulfield, maybe even calling up some of your younger players to where you can get a little more speed. Let Romanov do what Romanov does. He doesn't contribute offensively, but anybody that crosses the blue line with the puck is getting drilled. And that is where, if you want to use the physical game, I wish that they would use it just a little smarter.
Yeah, to your point, it feels like they're playing playoff hockey from, 2003, where they're trying to, ever dump it in and hit. And I'm like, it's great, but Toronto's quick enough and good enough to sort of, as you're hitting, the puck's already gone the other way, so it's kind of tricky to try and play a slow, I don't know. I know what you're saying. I agree. They're kind of trying so hard to hit them and get them knocked off their game, but I think we kind of saw it when the Leafs scored when Matthews got his 2-1 goal. There was a 3-on-2, and guys were out of position, and the next thing the puck's in the back of the net, and nothing on Carey Price. There was nothing he could do. He made the first save, and then that kind of shot, it's really hard to sort of have no rebound on. So, it was just frustrating because there was a lot of, again, after watching this team all year, and as soon as the Leafs went up 3-1, I knew the game was over because I don't have much confidence in this team's ability to score 3 goals. I can be wrong, and I'll be wrong, but I don't think many fans were expecting an offensive explosion from the Canadiens. A bit more of a pushback would have been nice. I know they had some opportunities at the end in the third when the game was really out of reach. But even those, like, again, I think through the two periods, they had 15 shots. I mean, what? And I know part of that is because they're on the penalty kill, but still, I mean, you got to try and make things a little difficult. I mean, I don't think Jack Campbell looked particularly comfortable in nets. There was a lot of rebounds and things. I mean, you know, they had an opportunity and they decided they didn't take advantage of it. And not to say that, you know, they should have won the game, because that's not what I'm saying, but Jack Campbell didn't look overly solid in the net to me, and they weren't able to sort of try and test it a bit more, partly because of them being undisciplined, but partly because, you know, I don't know, they just have trouble generating quality offensive chances, and it's very frustrating to watch at times. So
I agree. I think the challenge that I have, Connor, is that if they now go in game three back to a speed game, that's entirely predictable. The Leafs will then be ready for it. Had they gone with the speed game in game two, you might have surprised the Leafs for a period, because I don't think the Leafs were necessarily prepared for their approach in game one. And so I just think if you had mixed it up a little bit, now I'm worried. I don't quite see the game plan. It's going to have to be just outplaying the Leafs, and that's a tough call. Just to circle back to one thing you said, and I know that, and we can transition into some of the other parts of the game last night that weren't necessarily on ice decisions, but maybe off ice decisions or officiating. So you correctly identified that Shea Weber penalty is problematic. I mean, he got knocked over, and then, you know, in retaliation, the guy without the, he didn't even wait till the guy has the puck. He just drills him, ends up going to the box and opening up a chance for the Leafs to really put the game away. But I think when that decision went against the Canadians, and in fact, the decision to challenge the goal, that was when the air left the room, because instead of challenging, if they had called a timeout and they said, okay, guys, we're down by two, we need a goal to get out of this period and set up a battle in the third. I think that there was still a ton of time left. And what really bothered me about the challenge, well, there's two things. The first is Price was not upset about it. Price is a veteran goaltender. If he gets messed with, you're going to hear about it. You're going to see it in his body language. He's going to immediately start chirping. He didn't say anything. The second problem I have with it, and I'm sure you're going to have a take on all this, but the way that the TV showed, it was that Ducharme was fine with it, and then Bergevin is looking with his video review guy and the legal ops guy, and suddenly they're calling down to Alex Burrows, and suddenly, you know, the challenge is going through. Now, Ducharme addressed this in the post game, and he said, I have the final call, but we have a team around us. And I think it's fine to say you pay people to be your video review experts and you pay them for their expert opinion. But absent Price raising an issue, absent something definitive to challenge that goal, it's not just risky, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the problem for Bergevin now is it plays into this idea that he puts an interim head coach in that position so that he can try and pull the strings from behind. And whether that's true or not, the optics are there. There is now a narrative settling that Bergevin, scared for his job, puts in an interim coach and starts making decisions that are beyond the purview of a general manager and beyond the responsible division of roles and responsibilities within an organization. And that's what concerns me the most, because as we've discussed, for whatever strengths Bergevin has in terms of finding players that other teams have cast off or seeing things where other people don't see things, he is not adept at building a winning team. And the fact that he's got a say in roster, the fact that he's now getting involved in on-ice decisions, it deeply, deeply concerns me.
Yeah, and to your point about, you know, outside of his purview, it's also outside of his skill set, right? He's never been a coach. He doesn't know about icing. I know he's been a player, but, you know, there's a lot more that goes into being a coach than just things like that. So I agree that it really was bad optics. It really made it look like, I mean, it kind of cuts Ducharme's legs out from under him. And like when you see the general manager pointing it, you know, I don't think it was anything. I know they said they think there might have been a stick lift, but I think they said the puck was already in the net. I was surprised it took as long as it did, honestly, because to me it didn't look like there was much. It was just funny that someone I saw on Twitter was like, you know, it took guts to have to call a goal review against the Leafs in Toronto with Toronto, you know, with the review. He's like, whether or not it was interference or not, it takes guts to try and challenge a Toronto goal in Toronto. But it was dumb. And to your point, I think I agree. It was kind of, I saw him challenge. I think me, along with every other Habs fan, kind of putting our hands up and like, what are you doing? Like, why do we, they just scored. Their power play has been looking very lethal. And you're going to put them back out there? Like, this wasn't even questionable. You know, you look at it and like, maybe if there was something, but it was so, nothing happened. You know, it was just really, I don't know, it was dumb. And it, like you said, it definitely points to Bergeron being the one pulling the strings. Everyone saw that video of him looking at the replay, talking to that guy from Legal Ops and sort of saying like, it, like pretty much saying, yeah, it's, we have to review it. It's sort of what it looked like. And man, that was probably the turning point to your point, as you mentioned, right? Instead of taking a timeout, calming everyone down, say, okay, we had this crappy patch of play, undisciplined play. We got out of it, we're down two. You know, it could have been a lot worse, but we're down two, so let's get ourselves back in this game kind of thing. And instead they do something like that really sucked the air even more out of the team. And again, you sit your best players, or your most of your skill players, you sit them for another 2 minutes. So, you know, you take some of the players that would normally get a regular shift and they haven't played, what, more than half the period. You know, it's going to be tough for them to find their legs and get going again, which is kind of what we saw with some of those players. So I guess we kind of danced around it enough. We've called them shenanigans, but the refereeing in this game was, I would say, bad. Uneven, I guess, is a polite way to say it. I'm not here to question whether or not the Leafs deserved to win. They did. I'm not here to say that the referees determined the outcome of the game. I'm not one of those people who usually do it, but I will say that it was bad and extremely uneven. I think, you know, when Gallagher got that high-sticking penalty, there should have been incidentals, because I think it was Justin, I don't know who the other Leafs player was, got his stick in Gallagher's face also, but only one guy goes there. I found it really kind of weird. Who was it that speared Toffoli in the midsection? Nothing happened. I saw three or four blatant trips that didn't get called. I saw that hold, I think it was Bogosian held, I can't remember who, behind the net for one or free puck that wasn't called. So the problem is, like, I know Leaf fans, and like, you see them on Twitter, and it's like, oh, no, you weren't complaining about the refs in game one. I'm like, well, the refs have to call those six over-the-glass penalties the Leafs took, you know. And it wasn't about the calls against Montreal. It was the non-calls against the Leafs that I think everyone's kind of like. I find it shocking in any kind of hockey game when one team, I know we've talked about how, like, the makeup calls and all that stuff, but a team going to the, especially in playoff hockey where it's supposed to be rough and tumble and blah, 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 a team going to the penalty, what is it, can you tell, what, five or six penalties in a row? And the Leafs took one? Which to me, that was the big thing that was kind of like ridiculous. So I mean, and the thing is, you don't know how those penalties changed the flow of a game, I should say. Right? If I think a couple of those happened, they would have cut Toronto penalties off. You know what I mean? So it would have been 4-4, so it would have been more of a flow in the game. Again, I'm not saying the Leafs didn't deserve to win. I'm not saying the Canadians played well enough to win. But I do think, you know, it had a weird impact and a weird, it was just very frustrating to watch, because you want it just to, if they're going to call it one way, you want it consistent. You want to see it called evenly. And NHL refs don't ever really do that. But it's not usually this egregious, I find. And it's just really frustrating. And you know, again, I think we've talked about the NHL's overall issue with how they call games and how their officials call games. And as you mentioned, the stupid hockey culture around calling games. And I don't know. I thought it was just a terrible, terribly reffed game overall. And I'm not usually one to blame the refs, but this one was, it was up there. It almost sort of fed into the narrative that, like, oh, they want the Leafs to win. I mean, I don't think that, but it looked like it a little bit. Anyway. I don't know.
I think with the Tavares injury in game one, right? And then the problem is that it all goes together. So you have the game on Sportsnet where the entire universe revolves around Toronto. Then you have refs making those calls in the game immediately after the captain was injured. And so it's it feeds into this idea that it was going to be a makeup game. And that's what it looked like. And that the problem, you know, there's a myriad of problems from individual fans who want the Habs to win to people who just want the game to be called, as you say, evenly or more or less fairly. But I don't think an objective person could look at those games. I mean, the hit I'm thinking about is the sort of the hip check or sort yes. of backing into Kokanyemi, the boarding hit. That yeah. I mean, any other, I guess it's not boarding because his front wasn't facing him, but like you're opening up a whole can of worms if you're going to allow hits like that to go on, given the dangerous way that Kokanyemi went into the boards as a result of that contact. So I don't know. I just, it seems to, there was a lot of 50-50 calls that the Habs didn't get. And I think, you know, even Kokanyemi in the post game last night said, I have lots of things I'd like to say, but as you know, I can't say anything. That tells you something about how they're looking at it. I think, look, we got to just put game two away and gear up for game three. But if folks are worried that the Leafs are getting a certain standard of treatment, either by the broadcasters or by the officiating, last night's game did not do anything to dispel those concerns.
I mean, broadcasting,
you know, sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, hopefully Bergevin is going to now work the refs for a game three where it goes the other way. But that's not what you want to see. You don't want a series of makeup calls because we blew it the last time. You want to have one standard that's predictable, that is fairly applied. And can it be perfectly evenly applied every time? Of course not. These are human beings. But like, you can't look at last night and say, oh yeah, they definitely were calling the game evenly between those two teams.
Right. And yeah, that's just what anyone wants. And I was just going to jump in and say, like, I don't think anyone watching a Sportsnet broadcast is expecting there to be a level of even or balanced or neutral coverage, right? I mean, considering they are the national broadcaster, they definitely act like a regional broadcaster.
They act like Nessun. They act like Nessun, yeah. Where everything is filtered through the lens of that immediate team. Meanwhile, they have a national, they have the rights to broadcast nationally, and it's just not a good look. It's not a good look. CBC is already Toronto-centric. Like, that was often a concern that was expressed, but they went out of their way. I you know, when I was coming up, each Saturday, one was a Leafs game, one was a Habs game on the East Coast. Right. Yeah. And so the idea was you would every other week you would have that big night. Sportsnet, yeah, as you say, plays like a regional broadcaster, and it's not a good look.
Yeah. So, and on top of it, everything else about them, I find budget, unfortunately, considering it's a Rogers and there's a lot of money in that company. And I know part of it is the talent was not available to them, but yeah, it just, their broadcasts in general are very bad and across the board. And then when they got the hockey, and I know, I figured, okay, maybe it'll be okay. And then when I saw TSN signing up all their hockey guys to stay, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be awful. And it's been bad. And yeah, they're essentially, it's all Sportsnet Ontario, and you know, the rest of Canada can just suck it, and fine. That's how they want to be. But you know, after hockey leaves, no, I don't think many people are going to go back to watching Sportsnet. But the referee, yeah, the refereeing thing, yeah, definitely fed in, as you said, definitely fed into that kind of narrative of like, they're going to get all the calls. And, you know, the conspiracy theorist fans who believe that, you know, oh, Gary Bettman or whoever wants the Leafs to go on, whatever. I mean, we'll see. I mean, but I'm with you. I don't want it to be like, well, now game three is going to be the makeup game for the Canadians, because then it's like, hey, you had a bad game. And I think I'll start to go back even further. If they're making up a makeup game, game two is a makeup game because of the Tavares injury. It's, again, it was a fluke. It wasn't like Corey Perry cross-checked him in the face and they didn't call it. It wasn't like, you know, he didn't grab his head and throw his knee into his face, right? It was a weird play that was unavoidable and had very unfortunate consequences. It wasn't a dirty play that was missed. So that's the other thing. It's like, okay, Toronto kind of got it was a tough break. Like that what are you gonna, I mean, you can akin it to like if he got hit with a shot and it broke his arm. You know, you can't do anything about it. It just happened. So to have like a makeup game in terms of refereeing because of that, I think is, I mean, that's just all like bad. I think, I don't know how else to say it. It would be pretty stupid if that's how the refs are thinking. But yeah, let's just kick. Game two can just be put away, forget it, and let's just call it properly. You know, if you're going
to
call
it. And before we move on to game three.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, just before we move on to game three, I just think, look, shenanigans aside, right, whether it's the officiating, whether it's missed calls, whether it's poor decisions on reviews, the team has to play better. The team just has to play better. And that goes from the coaching in terms of finding consistent lines. That goes to players who are playing better and with more urgency. And that goes to finding the right mix of this veterans in this lineup and our younger players who can bring speed and energy to the game. And I just don't if your goal is, well, we just have to go back to do what we did in game one, I don't think that's the right answer. I think you have to treat game one as a fluke. They had some excellent elements that I think can be applied going forward, but the game plan cannot be we're going to hold the Maple Leafs to one goal. You, at some point, you're going to have to win a game where more than one goal is scored by your opponent.
And you're going to have to be able to, you're going to have to find a way to score more than two goals, we'll see. The only thing is now, I mean, doubling back as we're going to game three, I think there has to be something to change, and especially because the Habs, you know, for all of what we're talking about, the refereeing and things like that, I mean, the Habs' power play hasn't really looked great at all. You know, the one they had in game two, like they were in game one, was very ineffective, very no chances really, nothing, no chances of note. You know, they might have gotten a couple of shots, but they're typical not good, not high scoring spots, you know, from the sides and from the point and things like that. If whenever they get into the zone and get possession, which is also a struggle, so... I don't know this. I don't know what the answer is for that, but they got to find a way to make that power play click because it has, like, I mean, the second unit, I made the joke when we saw it. It's like, you know, who's going to handle the puck? And they had that problem in game one when it was Staal, Tatar, Anderson, Armia, and Weber. It's like, who's going to distribute the puck? And, you know, nothing happened. I mean, not to say the first unit was any better. I mean, the Canadiens are going to have to be opportunistic if they really want to win this series, and being opportunistic means having an opportunistic power play, and obviously they haven't had it all year. They haven't had it for the last 5 years, but they really need to find a way to make something happen on the power play, and just rolling out the same stuff over and over is getting really tiring, and doing the same stuff over and over is really tiring for me. Like, stop doing the stupid drop back pass. You know, they don't have a player on the roster that's going to back up a defense. You know, the drop back pass works if it's Connor McDavid, or Austin Matthews, or Patrick Kane, a guy who can stick handle their way through your line at the, you know, if they just want to stand up at the blue line. But if you're doing it with, like, Jeff Petrie, and, you know, I like Jeff Petrie, but that's not really his thing. If you're doing it, you know, Canadians don't have a player that's going to back off a defense. So it's just, I don't know, I just want to see some fresh thinking on the power play too, because they need to find a way to get it going at an average pace, not even a high level, just average. So that's something they can figure out between today and tomorrow before game three. But yeah, that's just something that kind of irked me, is watching their power play look as off. I mean, not to expect it to change, but it was just real, real unfortunate, and yikes. Anyway,
yeah, it's not a new problem. And I mean, last night they only had one opportunity, and it was in a broken game. They couldn't really capitalize. I don't know that they have a plan, and I hate how much time they waste getting the puck into the zone. Unless they win that first faceoff, you can basically write off the first minute, because right now the zone entry on the power play, it's atrocious, and I don't know what the answer is. I just think, just going back, just before we, you know, looked at game three, I just think if you had played that tough physical game in game one, went to the speed game in game two, came back in game three for that tough physical game, and then by game four, you would have beaten down the Leafs enough, because it's a back-to-back, you could have maybe then put your speed line in and just run them and outskate them. And I worry now. I guess the plan could be to sort of go back to that hard physical game in game to Monday night with the idea of putting in your speed on Tuesday. But I'm now concerned that too many of our veterans just don't look good, whether it's Tatar, whether it's Gallagher, whether it's Toffoli. I just don't know right now that we have the horses to make a strong push. So let's turn to game three. How do you see it going? What changes would you make if you had Ducharme Zier?
Well, first things first, Merrill out, Romanov in. I mean, Merrill has not looked great. And again, just treat, and I don't mean this to be overly disrespectful, but treat him as the player you brought him in to be, a depth defenseman. People thought maybe he could contribute, and he's had his moments, but he has not looked good. I mean, he looked okay in game one, but last night was just awful. And you just get him out, bring in Romanov. I mean, the thing is, Romanov's your future. And I kind of got into a back and forth with someone about this on Twitter about, well, why should they worry about the future? They should ice the best lineup. And I'm like, look, first of all, that would be the best lineup would be with Romanov, even though he struggled down the stretch. But why are you going to, like, even with Stahl, too, it's like, why are we going out of our way to make sure these guys get in the lineup when they're going to be off the team in a month or two, right? Like, what is the desperate, like, I know you want to win, but I'd rather go down with the few, like, guys getting experience and, you know, with a thought to the future than going down with guys who are, A, not playing very well, and B, not part of the team's plans at all. So I would definitely, I mean,
yeah, if I can chime in on that.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. And it's really been annoying me when people are like, oh, the NHL is in a development league. Yes, it is. What are you talking about? You have rookies playing there all the time. You have second year and third year and fourth year players, and they're developing. That's what's happening. So when you say ice the best lineup, well, when is the last time you had any kind of success in the postseason? It was in the play-in last year. And who did you rely upon? Your young players, Kokkinen and Suzuki, who stepped up. So I just don't understand the, to your point, you're putting in players that aren't going to be with the team in a few weeks. That's one piece. But the other piece is you need to forge with a team concept who have played together in the good times and the bad times. And if the Habs are going out in round one, I want it to be with players that are part of the team with these pickups playing defined roles when we need them. But it really confuses me, this idea that, like, well, the veterans, they have this other magic skill. Because where is it? Show me where it is. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's, like, I understand sometimes, like, having the right veteran who knows how to do things in the playoffs matters. But, I mean, first of all, John Merrill. I mean, I know he was pretty good with the Golden Knights when he was there. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, anyway, I want to see Romanov, and they got to find room for Caulfield. I don't know who's going to come out. I mean, people are saying Tatar, because Tatar's looked, I kind of mentioned it, but we're getting the Golden Knights Thomas Tatar right now, who's can't hit the net to save his life, and overhandling the puck and trying to do too much and losing and turning the puck over and not being effective at all. So I can see why the Golden Knights are eager to get rid of him. The thing is they need Tatar. Tatar is a guy who can score also, so he's got to get his mojo going, but I just think he needs to, I don't know, simplify his game a bit. It feels like he's trying to do a little too much. I think Brendan Gallagher is still trying to find his legs. I know he hasn't been playing great and he took a bad penalty, but he was off for, 6 weeks, so I think he's still trying to find his legs a little bit. I think they can't take him out of the lineup. I don't know who to take out for Caulfield, but man, they need him. They need someone who can score. Even if it's on the power play, you need someone who can. He's just one of those guys that has that innate ability that the puck finds its way, A, to his stick, and B, he finds the ways to put the puck in the net from anywhere. And like we said before, on a team that needs to score goals, why are you going to take out potentially one of your most dangerous goal-scoring threats in the name of, veteran experience or whatever that, frankly, hasn't really gotten them anywhere all season when they've started relying on it. So,
yeah, just to chime in on that too. The other thing about Caulfield, Connor, is that he forces the Leafs to look at him. He forces them to just be like, uh-oh, we got this guy here. And it may open up other lanes. Like, even if he's not scoring, all the time, he's going to force the Leafs to divide their attention. And that might create more opportunities. And that's what you get with a player like that. And I get that he's a rookie and he hasn't got that many games under his legs and certainly no playoff experience in the NHL. But this guy's succeeded everywhere he's been. So there are sometimes these preternatural players who could just do that.
Sometimes that's not a bad thing, though, right? I mean, sometimes you're so young and so inexperienced, you don't understand the weight of the situation, maybe. Or, you know, I know playoffs are playoffs and hockey players are understand, but, you know, maybe you just can be naive enough to just be like, yeah, let's just go play hockey, you know? Like, and we've seen it before. I mean, the Canadians called up P.K. Subban for a playoff run, and he played really well. You know, Colorado, when Kel McCarr joined after his university career ended, he was he's still amazing, but he really kind of had a coming out party. I can't remember if it was 2 years ago in the playoffs, but
yeah,
it's not unprecedented to have a rookie come in and make an impact on it in the playoffs. It's, you know, so I don't know what they're afraid of. Well, it's the Canes. They're afraid of losing, and that's, they're afraid he's going to make a mistake and it's going to be a big mistake, or, you know what I mean? And that, but playing in with a fear like that, from what, I mean, again, from the outside looking in, is not a way to run your team. Because I know we've talked about it before, but like, eventually you're going to have to live with mistakes from these kids. They're not going to be all of a sudden next year they're going to be perfect players. If you keep taking them in and out of the lineup and never letting them sort of learn and build through these experiences, you're always going to be kind of playing catch up with that. And I don't know, I just think if they don't make any big lineup changes for the game, because for game three. So I think if the Habs lose game three and it looks a little bit like game two, I don't know that I have much faith that the Habs will be able, you know, I think it might be as quick a series as some predicted. But yeah, we need to see something. You know, they got to change it up, because 3 goals in 2 games is not a recipe for any kind of success. So yeah, that's just where it's coming from. And I'll start here with you. I don't know how do you see the game going? I mean, first of all, give the game the perfect scenario for the lineup for you, and then how you think the game goes, and then what you think might happen. The reality version.
Look, ideally the third game is when you in my original scenario, the third game is when you were getting back tough again with the idea that you're going to speed them out on the fourth. But I think now, because of the way things have unfolded, I think I'd have to reverse it. I think you get your young guys in on the Monday night, and you skate them. And you try to get the win out with the idea that you're going to put your veterans in game four, when the Leafs hopefully are going to be tired. Remember, it's a lot. We've all played a lot of hockey, and those back-to-backs in the playoffs, I think, are going to be pretty intense. And I think you got to realize that a lot of the veterans that we're looking at are playing injured or are coming back from injury and maybe not looking 100%. So I think this is the game where it makes sense to me anyway that you get going with your depth. You bring in some young legs, and you try to change the script a little bit. Get away from playing the Leafs game and trying to respond to it, and trying to find your own way to punch through. If that were to happen, in my view, Evans would be in for Staal. Kokaniemi would stay. You would have Romanov in for Merrill. And I think I would take Tatar out and give Caulfield a shot, with the idea that if Caulfield doesn't work out in game three, you go back to Tatar for game four. But I would have no problem with bringing back some more veterans for that fourth game and giving them an extra day of rest. I don't think that's what they'll do. My sense is they'll probably do the opposite, which is play all their veterans again on Monday night, try to replicate game one at home, with the idea of maybe getting more youth in game four. But I'm not clear on how serious the Evans injury is. I'm also curious what your take is on, just on everything I just said, but then also whether we see Allen in on Monday or Tuesday, or whether we see Price go back-to-back.
Well, for that, 100% Price is going back-to-back. I mean, maybe if the Canadians were up 2-0 or 3-0 at that point, maybe you put in Allen. It's the playoffs, right? So he's going to play both games. You know, they did give him a month off at the end. I know he had the concussion, but I think, like I said before, part of that was giving him a bit of rest too to get ready for the playoffs. If you can't go back-to-back in round one after being off for a month, then I don't know. Not to say Allen doesn't deserve it, because he has played very well, but I just think they're gonna Price is going to be in the net. I understand what you're saying about the speed, adding more speed to the lineup to make the Leafs skate, but I just don't know if you want to play a... Not that it's going to be a track meet or anything like that, but I mean, the Leafs, that'll play sort of more into the Leafs' skill. And so it might, you know, it might free things up for the Leafs to be more open and creative, and I think that's sort of more what they want to do. Although they have shown that they can play more of a patient, conservative game, like we saw in Game 2 and Game 1, for that matter. It'll be interesting. I mean, look, they have. I really hope they don't lean on the veterans again for Game 2, Game 3. It's very obvious. I mean, I just don't know, like, okay, I'm gonna, I think the need for the Canadians to score goals is apparent, and the need for them to have a bit more mobility on the back end is apparent, and so I can see there are two players that can be inserted that help that a little bit, right? Caulfield and Romanov, clearly. Caulfield scores goals, and like you mentioned, can also draw attention because he can score goals. Even though he is a rookie, people know who he is. I mean, the Leafs know he scored an overtime winner against them. I like the idea of putting him with Suzuki or even Kotkaniemi. I mean, we saw the chemistry with Suzuki in the last game of the year, I think, against the Oilers. So there's, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to get some chemistry going with two of your future, you know, core players. I just want them also to put him in a place to succeed, right, with these guys coming to the lineup. I mean, Romanov will play where he does, but I mean Caulfield. I don't want to see him with Eric Staal and Corey Perry. Not that it didn't look okay. I think Perry and Caulfield have a little something, but if Staal's the center, I don't. It doesn't work for me. Just another thing I wanted to jump back on for Game 2. It's like I remember when they juggled the lineups in the third period to try and get back in the game, and it was Eric Staal got Josh Anderson and Brendan Gallagher. I'm like, why? Like, again, I don't know why they're forcing Eric Staal to be something he no longer is, but it was just frustrating to see, like, oh, we're going to give Eric Staal, like, the two of the best wingers on the team, and then it's going to be Kotkaniemi's playing with Paul Byron, who, by the way, looked pretty good, but, you know, not necessarily the same player Brendan Gallagher is, and Arturi Lehkonen, who, again, is a very useful player, but, you know, not necessarily known for his offensive abilities. But, yeah, I just want to see, if Caulfield comes in, I want to see him put into a good spot in the lineup. That's it. I want to see him play with someone where he can actually generate and create. But the more you said that they're going to go for Game 3, it's going to be the same lineup, the more I think you're right. And I just think the fear amongst fans in general when this all came out was that they would wait too long to make significant changes.
Right.
And if they wait till Game 4, it might be... And not that, say, you're down 2-1, you know, if it goes the way, like, that way. But if you're down 2-1, you know, it's too late. But, I mean, I don't know. It just... There's already the warning signs were there Game 1 a bit. In Game 2, we've seen some of those similar warning signs. I mean, all season, we've seen some of these warning signs. So, I mean, you can't sit here and expect things to just magically change if you're not gonna do anything about it. In terms of style and tempo, we'll see. I mean, if I don't mind the Habs trying to wear them down physically, because, I mean, that's the whole... I mean, look, that's what they have to do. That's the team Marc Bergevin built, right? It's all about being tough to play it in their own end, even though, I don't know, they're not really tough to play in their own end. But, you know, they want to be this physical, tough, playoff-built team, which is, again, what we've been sold. And, I don't know, let them do that. But they don't seem responsible enough to do it in the right way. You know, like you said, they're kind of, they seem to be willing, like, taking themselves out of place to make the big hits or do things like that. So hopefully they can play a bit more within themselves and make it, again, a bit more like Game 1 and play a bit tighter. But I'm really hoping to see lineup changes for Game 3. That's sort of what we'll find out more probably today and obviously way more tomorrow. But I don't know who comes out, but Caulfield comes in and Romanov's got to come in. And that's...
I think Romanov's in. I'm not so sure about Caulfield, but this is what I would like to see is go with some lines consistently over games and stop hitting mix on the blender every time they get down a goal. Because I just don't, there's no chance for these teams to establish chemistry. Now, I guess you could argue, well, if they haven't done it by now, they're never going to. But I just think if you're seeing somebody new every single shift, you have no chance to establish a rhythm, no chance to, like, get those intangibles that people refer to as chemistry, but it's more than that. It's knowing where they're going to be before they're there, or knowing that you can rim the puck because that person's always going to be on the boards on the breakout. And I just don't, I don't know. I am with people who worry that they're going to wait too long. I think the way they're looking at it is that the veterans can win you these close games, and that all the games have to be close in order for them to win. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but if your whole game is shutting down the other team and the Leafs are able to shut down the neutral zone, then you don't have any answers. And so I think you need to have both. I mean, this is what Bergevin said. They can win many ways. We need to win a different way. And just to throw the Leafs off and keep them guessing a little bit, I think you need to have players that can enter the zone with speed, that can fire lots of shots, that can not just with the forecheck, but that have some touch in front of the net. I was really glad for Kotkaniemi getting in and getting the first goal. I know he faded a little bit throughout the game. I don't know how much of that is related to the hit that he took in the second period, but I do hope that we give youth a chance sooner rather than later, number one. And number two, you figure out what your lineup is going to be and you stick with those lines, unless you absolutely need to mix things up in the third period. But I am not impressed with the Ducharme. You know, reminds me of the old days who was our famous smoking coach before Julien?
Therrien.
And he loved to hit the mix button on the blender, and that was one of the things that I think complicated the Montreal Canadiens during the last 2 years of his tenure. He basically only had one consistent line. I think Ducharme is trending in that direction, and I'm not sure I like it.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the other thing with Kotkaniemi, though, like, he kind of got taken out of the... He was playing very well, and he kind of got taken out, too, with the penalties, right? He doesn't kill penalties. So for more than half the second period, he's sitting on the bench. But yeah. I think overall, he was probably their best forward. But, you know, you can't only have one guy really going. When he was on the ice, the Canadiens were playing pretty good. And I know part of it has to do with the penalties, but, you know, he was, I think, the least used forward. So I don't know what they're afraid of. I mean, and not to say, and I know Nick Suzuki's in a bit more of a prominent role, but it's not to say Nick Suzuki's looked very good through the first two games or that line. I mean, so I don't know why one player gets a bit more of the benefit of the doubt over the other, but it's just, anyway, we'll see. I mean, like you said, hopefully they change it up a bit to give the Leafs a bit of a curveball about how they're playing. They got to find a way to break through the neutral zone. I mean, it's not hard if you watch the Montreal play Calgary and Montreal play Ottawa that, you know, the way to sort of slow them down or you know, beat the Canadiens is to really plug the neutral zone because they don't have any answers despite Marc Bergevin claiming they have many ways to win games. We've seen that they obviously do not. So now we have to rely on the Canadiens are built for the playoffs mantra that we've been sold. So hopefully they can find a way to bounce back and, you know, maybe the physical toll, the physical wear and tear will take its toll on the Leafs sooner than later. But I know we all kind of sound doomy and gloomy after last night's loss. That game kind of felt, like I said, it felt too much like the regular season for me. Hopefully they find a way to turn around, and I think it starts with inserting more youth into the lineup, giving it more speed, giving them a bit more of a dynamic look as opposed to an old and stagnant one. So here's to hoping that we'll see some lineup changes, and obviously we're recording this Sunday morning, so maybe by the time this comes out on Monday we'll know more, but at this time we do not in terms of the lineup or Jake Evans' injury, things like that. So, you know, this might all be for naught, but we're still going to complain about it now because we don't know any better.
Yeah, and as a final note, you know, I think one way or the other we'll be back with you this season. Hopefully next week we'll be setting up a game 7. And if we're not, then we're going to need to think about wrapping it up. But let's stay positive. I think we've seen enough from the Canadiens to know that they can play with this team. I think last night, if you're going to lose big, let's get it out of the way early. It makes sense from a narrative point of view that the game after their captain went down, after getting shocked in game 1, the Leafs would come back. The question for Monday for fans on Monday night is whether they can contain that team and punch back, or whether they're going to turtle and be run over. And that's the question that we need to know. And the only thing that's going to help us answer it is time. So here's to Monday night and a good game with some more youth, some more speed, and a new look.
And hopefully some more goals. I'm Connor LePaul.
That would help.
Signing off with the Last Word on Habs podcast. It's not over. It's only a 1-1 series. And like I said, or to start off, we'd all be very happy if at the beginning of this we said we'd split in Toronto. So despite what we've just saw recently in game two, let's try and stay focused, try and stay positive and understand that there are more games to be played. And Monday night, game three, let's see the Habs come back and give us all some hope and optimism again. So go Habs go. I'm not down on them. I'm not out on them yet.
Go Habs go, Connor. Talk soon.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.